Welcome, 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 everyone, to another episode of Faith All Over the Place. The fourth episode. This is episode number four. I told you we're going to try to be more consistent. Coming to you from the glorious Sonoran Desert on a beautiful winter's day, I'm Stephen Cruiser. And joining me, as always, somewhere deep in the woods of Georgia, my good friend and colleague, Chris Queen. How are you today, Chris?
I am good. It's just kind of a rainy, dreary day, so it's a good day to do some podcasting.
Although it's sunny and gorgeous here, and I need to go out for a walk soon. So, we don't have a guest this week. We're still working on it. We have a guest list. We're working on the guest. The guests will happen, but we're not going to not record just because we don't have a guest.
So that's right.
To set this up, just feel like I'm setting up an old game show here. We were isolated from one another, not in contact with each other. Chris and I both thought about the word cultural, and what was yours? You said cultural
Christianity.
And on the way home from church on Sunday, I went to Mass at the cathedral, and I was walking home because I've got to get my steps in every day. And as I was coming back from Mass, I was thinking about Lent, even though it's a couple of weeks away. And yeah, I've been doing a lot of early Lenten prep this year because the Lord knows I need a good Lent this year. and I was thinking about cultural Lent. I used the word in my head. It was culture, and I was going to talk to Chris about it. And then you hit me up on Monday, I think, with the cultural Christianity thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, you can believe in coincidence or you can believe in God. So, you know where we are at on that.
That's exactly right.
And you go with the cultural Christianity thing first, because I think it's probably more broad.
Okay.
than what I was thinking about with the cultural Lent.
I'll tell you, the first time I ever heard the phrase cultural Christian was back during the 2022 British Conservative Party Leadership Conference, when they were trying to determine who's going to be the next prime minister. And Kimmy Badenoch, who leads the party now, referred to herself as a cultural Christian. And she was the only one of the candidates who referred to Christianity in any way. So I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. So I looked it up, and turns out she is not a believer at all, but she identifies with Christianity as a you know, an important moral good. And now we're starting to see people like Richard Dawkins talk that way. And the historian Tom Holland, who I think is seems like he's awfully close to embracing Christianity, talks about it. And you know, other people like that who talk about the value and importance of Christianity to our culture, but they don't believe in it themselves, but they want to call themselves cultural Christians. And it's a strange phenomenon, because it's like trying to have your cake and eat it too.
Well, I've heard it used throughout my life, especially in the entertainment industry. I've heard people refer to themselves as cultural Jews. I've heard that throughout my entire career, and in fact, a couple of my best friends who were raised Jewish in the Jewish faith, but then they just say they're cultural Jews now. You hear that a lot, as, you know, I don't want to get off into politics here, but I hear that a lot as some kind of weird excuse for Jews who still vote for Democrats who don't like Israel. Well, I'm just a cultural Jew. I'm just like, okay, well, what does that mean? And you just explained, I mean, the way you explained it for Christianity works for Judaism too. I had never delved deeply into it, but I never heard it. I never heard cultural Christianity until you said it the other day. And it makes sense. Yeah. It's weird to me. Now this is going to be a little. It's to me. It's like you said, they want their cake and eat it too. So you opened that door already. So now we know I'm going to be more harsh about it.
Okay.
It seems to me like the lazy way to do things. It's like, oh yeah. Uh-huh. It's like I can say, and at the end, there is no small amount of virtue signaling involved there either.
That's true. That's true.
Then again, we could be accused of virtue signaling when both of us go out and talk about that we're, you know, about Christians too.
You're right, right.
But it's the right kind of virtue signaling.
it's true virtue signaling. Maybe that.
Well, it doesn't mean we're virtuous. Just professing that you're a Christian doesn't mean you're virtuous, though.
That's true.
You could just be using virtue signaling. But I like,
and in the cultural Christianity sphere, just saying that you like Christianity doesn't make you a Christian.
I mean, it's a good step toward, you know, being tolerant of people who you don't agree with religiously. I mean, if you like it culturally, you know, maybe people like that, if people like that are less likely to then, you know, because, you know, there's been a lot of anti-Christian bias in the press and politics and in everything for a long time, even in a country that's founded on Judeo-Christian principles.
Right.
There's a book I got to recommend to you that I recommend to everybody, but I don't think I've ever mentioned to you. I want to recommend it to everybody. It's fantastic. Charles Chaput, I don't know how to say Chaput, I don't know, but he wrote a book about how the U.S. is founded on Judeo-Christian principles.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, that's kind of the whole
thing. I like that. That's good.
You can't escape it. And the last book that he wrote about, I'll figure it out. Well, we're talking about something else. I'll look this up and then we'll put it. You can put it in the post if you do the post.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's a great book that's mostly about the United States history, Judeo-Christian, everything. It doesn't get into like super Catholic-y stuff until right at the end. So gotcha. I think it's accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
But the thing is the cultural Christianity thing makes sense to me for people who have a proper knowledge of American history. You need that.
That's true.
And then it all starts to make a lot more sense. You know, what am I trying to get to? You and I keep saying that we're not going to talk about politics on this, but I think it's unavoidable.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
What I'm curious about now is where the cultural Christians are, American cultural Christians are on the whole inalienable rights thing. I want to know where they think those come from.
That would be a good thing to find out. Yeah, it would be interesting to ask. And if you're listening to this and you consider yourself a cultural Christian, let us know. Send us a message if you're a platinum subscriber.
Or do you even believe in inalienable rights if you're not
right,
if you don't believe
right
in God?
That's true. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we just take it for granted that the inalienable rights come from God because we're believers in God and everything. I'm wondering if there's a work. I'm curious now if there's a work.
Right.
That would be interesting to know.
It would. Because it would change your whole philosophy of American government.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really would.
What I was thinking about was for the cultural Lent thing I've met throughout my adult life, I've met so many people who aren't faithful. Some of them are, you know, even way out there on whether they believe at all or not. But they still give up something for Lent every year. And I remember the first time I met someone who did that, I just think it's a good idea. And they do it for Lent. And it's just so they're working on the church calendar. But I started thinking about that the other day. I started thinking about there is value in a lot of the Lenten practices of the Catholic Church. And then I want to ask you about that. That you could see that would apply to secular life, even if you weren't a believer. Like, you know, okay, now I'm going to deny myself something. Maybe I give up booze for Lent. But Lent is also supposed to be a celebration too. I wonder if they do that. I was always curious about that. And I've met people, at first I thought it would just be people who were raised Catholic, but then are lapsed, you know?
Right.
I've met people who weren't raised Catholic, who've never been Catholic, who give up something for Lent.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that because it seems like you could just choose any period of time throughout the year.
Yes.
If it's not tied to the theological aspects of it.
But they don't. They choose Lent.
Wow. Maybe it's a peer pressure kind of thing.
No, these people
I don't know.
No, they look forward to it.
Wow.
Everyone I know who's done, and I've met a lot of people. I mean, I couldn't even begin to count them. And so, first of all, I want to know what I don't know, since we're all about learning about each other here.
Right. So,
what do you do for life? Is it, do you follow any kind of, like, give it up, do this, do that?
I don't. We do special devotions during Holy Week is what we do at our church. And of course we're a completely independent church. So, you know, we don't have any denominational ties to work with. But really Holy Week is the important. I have friends who do Lent on their own, but it's not something that we do as a church. You know, I know people who go to Ash Wednesday services who are not part of those. Some of them go to the Methodist ones. Some of them go to the Catholic ones. And it really is a personal, you know, mark this time in your own way kind of thing. But we do specific devotions as a church during Holy Week.
Starting on Wednesday or throughout the
starting
week?
Starting on Palm Sunday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because things really don't kick off in the Catholic Church until Wednesday, usually. Monday and Tuesday, it's all still Holy Week, Palm Sunday.
Right, right.
Palm Sunday is, of course, the longest Mass of the year. it's a lengthy one. if you go to the Latin Mass for Palm Sunday, you just, like, you know, block an entire day off your calendar. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
But the Lenten practices that a lot of people see from the outside from the Catholic Church that they think are so severe, I think are like enlightening. Like, we have to abstain from meat on Fridays, which in the Catholic Church means you can still eat fish. So I never quite understood the origin of that. And I should. I know there's an origin story there. And I know a lot about the church. I've never looked into that one. I just thought it was a good idea all the time.
Right, right. Well, even growing up here in the South, we would have like fish sandwich or fish fillets on Fridays as our school lunch.
Yeah, and that's interesting. Just in case, just in case you had the random Catholic in there.
I guess so. Yeah, it just kind of tied. I mean, this was an elementary school, so I mean, I don't know how strict some of those Catholic practices are with younger children, but we would do that.
There are age limits on abstinence. I don't think I'm looking them up for you right now. I know that I am aged out of having to fast during Lent, which but you only fast on Ash Wednesday and Friday.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
I think that once you hit 60 and a half or something.
Huh.
You know, so I don't have to fast. We still have to abstain on Fridays. The Traddy Catholics still do the every Friday.
Right.
All year. But I think the ages are, I think it's 18 to 60 something.
And I think there were local restaurants that did fish specials on Fridays too.
Well, that's how the filet of fish sandwich came to be at,
McDonald's.
They, like, Ray Kroc, when he started expanding it, he was like, well, we don't want to, like, rule out the Catholic population of the country on every Friday. Because that was still back pre-Vatican II when abstinence was an every Friday thing.
I like a good filet of fish.
Anybody who says they don't like McDonald's is. I like who's it?
I agree.
Nate Bargatze, the comedian. He's like, he loves McDonald's. He's always talking about it. He says, I hate it when I talk to people and say, well, I haven't been to McDonald's in forever. No, come on. Somebody is going to McDonald's. McDonald's is doing quite well.
Absolutely.
Stop saying that. All right. Yes, it's 18 to 59. Having to. Now, this says for abstinence, but I don't think this is right. This is one of those AI generated things.
Oh, I'm
pretty sure that only has to do with fasting.
Huh.
Oh, no. This doesn't say fasting. It doesn't say abstinence. I think abstinence doesn't start till you're 18. And if there's a health thing, you don't have to do it all
right. Right. That makes sense.
So, and the way the Catholic Church does fasting now is so wussy. I'm just like, come on. It's like, you can still have one substantial meal at some point in the day. Not well, don't go overboard, but you know, you can still eat, and it's not most Americans aren't going to suffer from having a day where you can't gorge your gaping maws.
Right.
So even though I'm aged out of, even though the rules don't apply to me with fasting, I still do fast normally on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. I've been doing the Good Friday devotion for so long, I would be very uncomfortable wolfing down a big meal on a Good Friday. It would just be off for me.
Do you completely fast those days, or is it just
I'll have like a bowl of soup or a small salad at around
5 o'clock. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. It's not like the monks back in the old days who just basically didn't eat took in like 300 calories a day for 5 days. Mm. They stopped that because so many of them were having digestive issues.
I can see why.
But yeah, a Good Friday, I check out completely. I don't like to talk to people. I pray, or listen to spiritual music.
Right.
Sometimes I go to church. We don't have mass on Friday because we celebrate the living Eucharist at mass, and right. Jesus isn't. So it's a very, but we, there's a very nice service. You can go to Stations of the Cross. I used to do that when I had more energy. But two years ago, Paula asked me to work on Good Friday.
I remember that.
And I was like, me? And she goes, I know. And then this is how locked in I've been on Good Friday for most of my life. When my friends and relatives found out I was working on Good Friday, they were all going, seriously? You?
Oh, wow.
and of course, and then Paula hits me with, well, I shouldn't be too busy. Everyone we have who wrote for us at the time decided to do 3 posts that day.
Uh-huh.
If I was 12 hours I was on the clock that day.
Oh my gosh.
So, but back to the cultural thing, I think here's where the cultural thing provides an advantage. If we're going to evangelize, they've got maybe half a foot in the door then.
Right.
To me, it means that they're obviously not hostile toward, because there's a lot of hostility towards Christianity or religion in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here in the 21st century.
Absolutely.
So I think it's an option. That's what I hadn't thought of until right now. So Chris and I were just deciding to go with this. We didn't do any show prep today. We just thought it was so interesting that we both did the cultural thing at the same time that we just wanted to see what we know. So there, wait, what do you think of that? I think that's almost an invitation to start evangelizing a little, even though we should be all the time. But
it really does seem like it's a good opportunity to have some conversations, because the philosophy of evangelism I think of is that we are gardeners, and sometimes we're just planting seeds, sometimes we're watering the garden, and sometimes we're reaping the harvest. And if there are people who have their minds on Christianity, whether it's during Lent or whether it's other times of the year or other opportunities, you know, to be able to have some conversations and say, you know, this is why we do what we do. It's an opportunity to till the soil or water the plants that might be sprouting up with people.
It's because it's almost like to continue that analogy. It's almost like they planted the seed themselves.
Right?
Or did you just say that?
Yeah. No, it's true. I think you've got a really good point there.
That's a perfect way to go about it. If they're going to plant the seed, then you know we can. Tend to the garden, water it. We've got all the good analogies, all the good ways of saying like I'm going to try to convert.
Stretch this metaphor as far as we can.
One of the things that I, at least most people know about me in my Catholic ways, is they're like, well, people are always like, you're not going to convert me. And I said, doesn't mean I'm not going to stop trying. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop trying. It's just like, oh, cruisers are trying to convert me. Like, true. I said, my success rate isn't overwhelming, but you know, when I hit one out of the park, it's worth it.
There you go.
So I keep at it. I'm really looking forward to Lent this year for a variety of reasons. happens because they're like refocused so much stuff. And there's the fact that politically, those of us on this side of the aisle are happy. And so it might help me stay focused even better because I like to do something positive for life too, which you can do. There's just got to be a devotion. Right. It's not all about giving something up.
Right.
But I do think that's a good question. It took one year when my daughter was young, I got up and just announced to her that I was going to give up. What was I going to give up? A beer and cheese for one Lent. And that was like the dumbest thing I've ever done. One or the other. Okay. Both? I might as well have moved into a monastery.
That's a big commitment.
Those are the two things that I would prefer to survive on if I were moved on a desert island. Just beer and cheese. Beer and cheese. I don't need anything else.
There you go.
But have you, you've only met one person who talked about being a cultural Christian, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know some people, people that I would almost call Christian adjacent.
Okay.
Who are, you know, respectful of Christianity, even though they're not believers. I know quite a few people who are that way. I actually read an interview this morning with Jordan Peterson.
Okay.
And it sounds like he is moving closer to embracing Christianity. He actually referred to himself as a new kind of Christian, but he didn't really reflect any true commitment. But he did say that he has been going to Mass with his wife, and his wife is a very committed Catholic. And he was talking about how it resonates with him. It was an interesting interview. It was a lengthy interview, so I didn't read it super in depth. I just kind of scanned it because I knew we were talking about this today, and I saw the headline and thought, okay, I need to check this out. But it, you know, I think about him, and I think about Tom Holland, the historian who has done so much to sort of demythologize the true positive aspect that Christianity has had on the world, especially on the Western world, and kind of debunk the whole Christianity is a bad influence because of the Crusades mythology. And he's on a journey that is bringing him closer to Christianity. And we're seeing people, you know, Ayaan Hirsi Ali and her husband have embraced Christianity. And yes. It's, I don't know if big revival is coming, but I'm beginning to wonder.
Well, given my politics and my devout Catholic faith, my view of the Crusades is a lot different than other people's.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Big fan.
Exactly. Well, I mean, look, I mean, you know, our colleague Raymond Ibrahim has written tons about it. And it, you know, it's the narrative that it was this awful, awful thing. I mean, people do awful things all the time, but the Crusades did have a function and a purpose. And, you know, They kept Islam at bay for a long, long time.
I'm going to get raped for this, but I might want to think about bringing them back. just could not resist.
Hey, I get it.
I have to remember that I have to censor myself more when we're doing this podcast. I'm trying not to be too narrow focused, narrowly focused. But well, we still got what, 2 weeks before Lent starts, I think.
March 5th.
2 weeks from, what day is today? Wednesday or Thursday?
It is Wednesday today.
2 weeks from today. Okay.
Wow, we're in one of those calendar cycles where everything moves down. Like Lent's a little bit later. You know, Thanksgiving's later this year. And it's always a kind of a weird time warp kind of feeling. Well, then
because Easter is just, it's like, I know the rules for Easter. It's the first full moon after the vernal equinox.
It's April 20th this
year.
That's
what it is. That's the rule. Easter has to be the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal week, something like that.
Wow. 420, it brings a different meaning to Easter grass.
Yeah.
Wow, that is late. At least you don't have to worry about it being cold at Easter. Like, some, not when it's earlier, it can be just a crapshoot on what you should wear for Easter, because you don't know if you need to wear short sleeves or long sleeves. But this year will be short sleeves.
Heck, I got it right. First Sunday following the first ecclesiastical full moon that occurs on or after the day of the vernal equinox.
Ah, okay.
So that's why it's always wildly different. And then I got to go back and once again relearn the rules of why the Orthodox. Oh, because they're on the Julian calendar. That's why.
Right, right. Yeah. Because
the Orthodox, they said no. They're so Orthodox. They said no to the calendar.
But look, I just Googled Orthodox Easter. It looks like it's the same date this year.
Oh.
Wow. Interesting.
And I don't know how they determine that. Oh, and then Passover doesn't always coincide perfectly with Easter, but it does this year. It ends on Easter Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Every little big harmonic convergence.
It is. It really is. That is fascinating.
I might fly to Michigan for Easter this year. I haven't spent it with I haven't been with my mom or my sister on Easter Sunday. And when we were young, my Polish grandmother here, my babci, Easter was huge.
Right.
Huge. That's when everybody would want to be a cultural Catholic. Because my grandmother would spend a week cooking and all Polish food. And it was just amazing.
Oh, wow.
And, but there was something I wanted to tell you before we started to wrap up. I always assume. See, I'm the one conservative. I don't pay that much attention to other people, as everyone knows. So, Jordan Peterson is, for the most part, always been on the periphery of my awareness. I'm the conservative who isn't like hip deep in Jordan Peterson lore.
I'm not either. So,
but he pops up on Instagram and everything once in a while, and from what I've seen of him briefly, I just assumed he was a Christian.
I mean, he
talk about somebody who's got a foot in the door. This should be easy for his wife to pull him in. She works
right. That's true.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. People, you know, the world is filled with a lot of people who behaviorally are better Christians than people who say they're Christians.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
I've met a lot of really good people who weren't going to Mass every Sunday. And then I met some people who go to Mass every Sunday who are just, okay, well, to forget about it as soon as they get out the door. I made a big personal decision last week. I have a church that's like 300 feet away from me, according to Google Maps. 300 feet.
Wow.
Okay. But it's this little, it's the one where the Latin Mass is happening, which I don't mind going to every once in a while, but I don't want to go all the time. And there are only two English Masses there. And they're two separate parishes, actually. The Latin Rite community, Roman.
Okay.
And the Ordinary Rite community.
Okay.
The Novus Ordo. Novus Ordo? I can't remember my Latin things. But the English, the regular parish community is a dying parish. I mean, that church would have closed already had the Latin community not come in and pay for it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I go there and there's hardly anybody there. And I'm one of the youngest guys.
that is fascinating.
It's a dying parish. And so I want to go to the cathedral, which has a history in my family. You know, my sister was married there. My dad and grandfather's funerals were there. I graduated from high school there. And it's a gorgeous church, and it's only a mile from me. It's not like it's Tucson. It's like you fall over, you hit a Catholic church. So I was coming back from Mass the other day, and I told the usher, I think I'm going to change my parish registration here. And I said, do you need any ushers? He said, we always do, blah, blah, blah. And I'm walking home, and I start to feel guilty. I feel like I'm abandoning Holy Family. I go, me saying it, it's Catholic. You got to have the guilt. Big factor.
You are right. That makes sense.
You're just not being a good Catholic. If you're walking away from Mass and not feeling guilty about something, you really blew it that day.
Then you need to confess the sin of pride at that point.
One of the oldest lines in my act in the ever-evolving Catholic boy bit that I've had 30-something years in my act was that Jews invented guilt, Catholics perfected it.
That's good. That's true.
There's not a state of non-guilt in the Catholic Church. Guilty until proven Protestant is our motto.
That's good. I like that a lot.
But I'm still changing parishes, which is a personal decision. But the parish that I went to in Santa Monica was huge. They had 8,000 families.
Goodness.
Masses were packed. The various organizations. That's how I got through my divorce. I was involved in like 5 ministries in Santa Monica when I got divorced. So all my free time when I wasn't parenting, I was spending at the church.
Right, right.
Which was not bad therapy.
No, not at all. I mean, I think it's always good. Serving is always a good way to help yourself as well as helping others.
And I would like to get back into doing that at church too. And this little church with the 40, 50 people at the mass doesn't need
you. Right. They makes sense.
They've got 3 people covering all of that. But I talked to the head usher, Pedro, and he said, we always need ushers. I went, okay. Because I did that for 20-something years.
Right.
My daughter, I got her involved in it. She was the youngest person that they ever let be. They call them hospitality ministers in Santa Monica. She was the youngest person that they ever let be a hospitality minister. And they used to never let them go near the collection. They were not supposed to be near the money. And then when she was 9 years old, she's been hanging around so long, just let her do the collection. Nine. She was already, because she'd been shadowing me on the collections since she was like 5.
Yeah. So, I mean, she knew what she was doing.
Yeah. So, I'm glad we had this conversation. I'm glad.
Me too.
But I'm glad we recorded. We wanted to record last week, and Chris and I were so busy. It's hard to describe to anyone just have the fire hose of availability of information for us to write about every day.
That's true.
I've made a list this week of things I wanted to write columns about, and then Paula suggested something else yesterday, so I scrapped the one I was working on and wrote that. It was a news story, but because it's me, I can't go fewer than 700 words. I just can't write a short post. And it's just, there's so much. So Chris and I last week were just like, I'm busy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. What do you want to talk about? No. Okay. So we did, and as Chris said, let us know if you consider yourself a cultural Christian. We'd like to know more about that.
Yes, please.
And again, then one of us is going to start bugging you to convert. But it's like, at least we're open about it. We're not going to sneak.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Might not,
it would be. I mean, I would love to know what more people think about that concept. And even if you are a Christian and you have thoughts about it, let us know.
Especially since it's probably a new concept to a lot of people. And you would have thought that I would have encountered it or even pondered it after all the years I've heard about people being cultural Jews.
Right, right.
It's just like, I just thought that was like, I could see that more. You know, you've got these Jewish communities and in Manhattan, you got some of them in New York, but a lot of those are devout Jews too. But then I know other people are just like, yeah, I had my bat mitzvah, my bar mitzvah, and they just stopped.
And there are plenty of cultural Jews in Israel.
Yes. Which really baffles.
Look, no kidding. How can you live in the Holy Land and not believe in it? I don't know.
All right. Well, I'm going to go work on this aching foot of mine. And it's
like, I hope you get to feeling better.
So, no. This is the thing, though. I am one of those people who believes that life is a gift. I'm grateful for it. I start every day thanking God for another beautiful day and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I'm glad that I can move. If there are aches and pains involved with it, you know, it's an age related thing. There aren't
absolutely.
I don't have bad knees, knock on wood. I got a couple of orthopedic things that are acting up because I'm very active, but I'm grateful for that. I'd rather that than not being able to move and not feeling any pain, movement related pain.
Right.
I'm still alive. That's what the pain tells you.
Yeah, that look, it's true. I was thinking yesterday, like yesterday it was, I was just cold all day and my feet were really cold. And I was kind of grumbling to myself about that. And I thought, you know what? At least that means I'm not a diabetic, because if I were a diabetic, that means I probably wouldn't be able to feel my cold feet.
There you go.
Like, go figure.
However you get there, however you meander, if you get right. to the right, if you get to the right place and don't kill anyone along the way, that's my philosophy of life.
Amen to that.
What did I wrote something down today about something about weird and whimsical thoughts, as long as they don't involve killing anyone, or should always be contemplated. Should I like that's my baseline. If you're not murdering anyone, if you're not murdering anyone, that doesn't mean I want you to assault anyone either. But I think, look, at the bare minimum, don't kill anyone.
Yes, I like that. That's good.
It's in the commandments.
That's good. Yes. Yep.
All right, buddy. Well, you are you on the clock today? Are you editing today?
I am.
We're recording on Wednesday instead of Tuesday. So Chris will get the post up. We still haven't got an email address yet. I haven't got a new email address for the briefing either. So I'll look into that this week, and we will talk to you. We will talk to you all next week, and then and then the week after that, big Lenten kickoff. We'll do the big Lenten
kickoff. Big Lenten kickoff.
Big Lenten kickoff, and I'll tell you what I'm giving up. And
it sounds like a car sale.
This is, you got to be serious about it too. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
2 years ago, St. Patrick's Day fell on a Friday during Lent.
Right, right.
And it was up to everybody's bishop as to whether or not there was a dispensation for eating meat that day.
Oh, wow.
Your chances were greater on getting the dispensation if your bishop was of Irish
that makes sense.
Extraction. And so it was funny. It's like right at the beginning of the Lent, there was a big thing on the front page on the diocese website saying, yeah, you get a pass on St. Patrick's Day. You can eat corned beef.
There you go.
Except Jim, our producer, who his bishop didn't give him the dispensation.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, that's just awful. That's just, especially, you know, it's that close to the COVID misery that everybody went through.
Almost mean.
Yeah. But, you know, you gotta rules, even though.
Right, yeah. To have
some, but it was great talking to you. Thank you for taking time out of your day.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
We're glad that, you know, a lot of good stuff going on in the world right now.
That's so true.
We're gonna keep talking about that too, and we won't always try to get political. Sometimes we'll just try to talk about filet of fish sandwiches.
Right? Yes.
Now I want one. Now I really want one.
I do too, and I'm not even hungry.
God, and that's so not on my food regimen right now. And the worst thing ever now is Uber Eats. When I got back from Michigan 2 weeks ago, I knew that I was going to hit the fitness regimen soon. And the first night back, I was hungry. I got home at like 10:30, 11 at night. And I went, Uber Eats has got to still be delivering McDonald's. And I just went nuts. There's nothing worse than having McDonald's being just delivered to your door.
That is true. Ugh. That is true, because there ought to at least be some sort of effort that involves you burning calories to get it, even if it's just walking through the parking lot.
Yeah, and then you're paying a premium for it, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, paying whatever the... And people always ask, how much does Uber Eats cost? I said, I don't care. I don't. Right. The thing is, as an American, I will pay for convenience all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
It's my right as an American. When I was in LA and I lived a block from a 7-Eleven, I didn't know how I'd managed to live that farther away than that from a 7-Eleven throughout my entire life. Like, how did I survive in the wild with no 7-Eleven walking? And it was just so I will gladly always pay for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what sets America apart. That's American exceptionalism right there, people.
Right.
Being able to have McDonald's delivered. Nate Bargatze, I think I already mentioned once. I order McDonald's to my hotel room after a show, like I'm a god or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a god or a king or something. He said, yeah, I just can't deliver it. Bring it to me.
It's one step away from having somebody feed it to you.
Yeah. I'm going to go not have a filet-o-fish sandwich right now.
There you go.
I'm going to go have my nutritional meal replacement shake and then go for a walk on my sore foot. And the entire time, thank the Lord that I can still feel pain in my feet. And now that Chris has thrown his thing into the mix, I'm going to thank the Lord that I don't have diabetes because I can feel pain in my feet.
See, wait, there you go.
But I thought diabetes gave you neuropathy.
I think it's a different kind of pain, but it also makes you numb.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, okay. So whatever it is, we're going with it. Thank God we don't have diabetes.
Yeah, we're just glad we don't have it.
Maybe we'll change that to the title. The title is going to be about cultural Christianity, or maybe like Faith All Over the Place, episode 4. Thank God we don't have diabetes.
Thank God we don't have diabetes.
You know, that's a good hook. That's a good.
I like it.
That's a good, what are we, clickbait hook.
Say is it's like clickbait. That's exactly what it is. Well,
you know, okay, there is no shame in ways to promote this, okay?
That's right.
All right, man. So we'll get together. We'll figure out next week.
Okay? Yep.
Oh, thank you, everybody, for listening. We forgot to do that.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, thanks, everybody.
All right.
We just kind of drifted off, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Did you ever watch the old Craig Ferguson show and everything? He'd do the awkward pause at the end of it.
Yes.
You want to do the awkward pause? That's what we just did. Chris and I started to do it. And the awkward pause doesn't work as well when it's audio only.
I was going to say, it's more of a sight gag.
Yeah, it's just dead air when you're doing it this way. All right, we'll talk to everybody next week.
Peace.